Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I am your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for at least the next hour and a half. We had previously booked a two-hour show, and tonight's guest might have to scoot out a half an hour early. Still, I may have some comments afterwards on this August the 20th on the West Coast, now August the 21st on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. Welcome. So nice to have you with us. This is a momentous occasion for me on Evident Footprints. I have had some really outstanding guests on the show. I had the opportunity to meet tonight's guest back in 1988 through an introduction with a mutual friend involving an assault case that I was personally involved in regarding a church in Southern California. I never did get my day in court, and I became an expert on cults as a result, and it has led me into investigating government corruption, and so it is no irony that tonight's guest is on my show tonight. I follow in his footsteps, which are mighty big footsteps, I have to say. He is an author. He has written numerous books, and I'm going to go down the list for you. Helter Skelter, of course, that was the story about the Sharon Tate murders and the prosecution of the Charles Manson gang. Till Death, Us Do Part, A True Murder Mystery, and The Sea Will Tell, Outrage, The Five Reasons Why O.J. Simpson Got Away with Murder, The Phoenix Solution, Getting Serious About Winning America's Drug War, No Island of Sanity, Paula Jones versus Bill Clinton, The Supreme Court on Trial, The Betrayal of America, How the Supreme Court Undermined the Constitution and Chose Our President, Reclaiming History, The Assassination of President John F. Kennedy, and his most recent work, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. That is the reason why tonight's guest is on this show. We are going to go down the rabbit hole and revisit the beginning of the Iraq War, possibly talk about 9/11 as well. And with that, I would like to invite for the first time, and hopefully not the only time, to Evident Footprints, famed Los Angeles prosecuting attorney, Mr. Vincent Bugliosi. Vincent, welcome to the show.
Don, thanks so much for having me on the show. And we go all the way back, you and I guess, to 1988, which is how many years ago? About 20, 25, 26 years ago. But a quarter of a... No, I'm not thinking correctly.
About 20 years ago.
About 20 years ago.
Yeah.
About 20 years ago, yeah. Wow. My sister used to live in Cleveland. Is that where you're located now?
Well, I'm outside of Cleveland a little bit, but I'm in Ohio, yeah.
Yeah, she lived in Rocky River. That's, I guess, a suburb of...
That's where my mother was born.
Really? Well, whenever used to come to town for a book tour, you always came to Cleveland. And they used to have a lady there who at one time apparently interviewed Adolf Hitler. I forget her name. But she died when she was close to 100 years old, and she had a television talk show there along with a couple other talk shows in Cleveland, and you always went to Cleveland.
Dorothy Fuldheim.
That's right. That's right. That was her name, right. I think she lived to be 100 or so.
Yes, yes. And she was on Channel 5 ABC for most of her career. Yes, I remember her well.
Right. They don't have these book tours as much anymore, Don. They have what they call satellite TV. You sit in one spot, and they take you around the country. They say, you're 3 minutes now, you're in Akron, Ohio. Now you're in Orlando, Florida for 3 minutes. Now you're in Sacramento, California for 3 minutes. But they used to travel around the country, and Cleveland was an automatic stop because they had a lot of talk shows there.
Yes, that's true. I owe you a belated happy birthday. You celebrated the birthday, 2 days ago now?
Yeah, how would you know my birthday?
I'm a researcher.
Oh, okay.
And an intuitive investigator. And I thought, well, this man has to be a Leo, and sure enough, you are.
Zodiac signs or whatever they call them. I'm not into that, but I've been, someone has told me that I'm a Leo, so.
That's astrology. Well, I just thought I would mention that and wish you a very happy birthday. I won't mention your age unless you care to. But
thank you, sir. Well, I'm 74, but I was joking about my age to someone that this Reclaiming History, this is my magnum opus on the Kennedy case, and I said it took a lot out of me, and I said, and this person said, no, you look fine. I said, I said, I don't look a day over 90, and she said, you don't, which is a nice thing for her to say. But anyway, I'm 74 now, but
okay.
I'm still able to run around the block, and I'm as angry as I've ever been, and it's about this guy, George Bush. I don't have to tell you, Don, you know a little bit about me. I don't like to see anyone get away with murder, even one murder. Simpson got away with two murders, and I was so angry I wrote a book, Outraged, The 5 Reasons Why O.J. Simpson Got Away with Murder, shot up the number one in the New York Times bestseller list. So if I can get that angry, Don, over someone getting away with one or two murders, you can imagine how I feel about George Bush, who I'm personally convinced has gotten away with well over 100,000 murders. And then to rub salt into the wounds, he's enjoyed himself throughout the entire hell on earth that he created in Iraq. In my book, The Prosecution of George Bush for Murder, I present all types of evidence of the fact that well, young American kids, we're talking about 18, 19-year-old kids, Don, who never had a chance to live out their dreams and were being blown to pieces by roadside bombs in Iraq. This guy, George Bush, was having a lot of fun and enjoying life to the very fullest. I'm talking about running, bicycling, slapping backs, joking with friends, dancing and swiveling his hips like Elvis to blaring music, eating his hot dogs and blueberry pies, almost always seeming to be in the very, very best of good spirits. And in the book, have you seen a copy of the book, Don?
Yes. In fact, David Cass graciously sent me a copy, which I received a day before yesterday,
late
in the day.
There's a photo section there where I show the terrible, terrible suffering of the Iraqi civilians and their survivors, and of course the American soldiers and their survivors. Mm-hmm. And then in juxtaposition to that, I show George Bush, and these are not gotcha photos. There is one photo that probably shouldn't be in this section. It's a gotcha photo, but the others show him in deep revelry, just having the time of his life while all of this horror was going on. He himself has not had any hesitancy, Don, in saying things like this over and over again. And while I quote Bush, I'm going to quote you a couple words of his. Try to imagine, Don, in your wildest imagination, Roosevelt, Truman, LBJ, Nixon, saying things like this during their respective wars. And also try to imagine that at the very, very same time that George Bush is uttering these words, all of the death going on over there in Iraq, the horror, the sea of blood, the screams, the bodily mutilations, the beheadings. Here's George Bush. Laura and I are having the time of our lives. Another occasion. I'm in a great mood. It's going to be a perfect day. I'm feeling pretty good about life. Don, here's someone whose war has cost this nation over $1 trillion so far with no end in sight. He's literally destroyed an entire nation. Most importantly, of course, by far, and it bears repeating, well over 100,000 people in their cold graves right now because of it. And he says he's feeling pretty good about life. There's no question that this is a monstrous individual that we're dealing with. He's happy. As recently as March of this year, I don't know if you recall, he showed up at a press conference with John McCain to endorse his candidacy, and McCain was a little late. What does Bush do? He launches, with a big smile on his face, spontaneously launches into a soft shoe tap dance routine to entertain the assembled media. Mike McKinnon, a bicycling friend of his, in 2005, told the New York Times that he had never seen Bush more relaxed, confident, calm, relaxed, and happy. And Don, even if George Bush was only guilty of making an innocent mistake in taking this nation to war in Iraq, as opposed to murder, as I firmly believe, and I hope we have time to get into some of the evidence that I have against him,
mm-hmm.
with all of the death, blood, and horror he has caused, Don, what type of a human monster is it who could be happy with his life? So, you know, I went off on a riff. You said one or two words, and I just took off, but I'm extremely angry at George Bush. Big time angry, and I'm not going to be satisfied. I may not succeed, but I'm not going to be satisfied until I see him in an American courtroom being prosecuted for first-degree murder. And if he's convicted, it'll be up to the jury to decide what the punishment should be, one of their options being the imposition of the death penalty.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more in apprising your feelings and apprising my own. I feel exactly like you do. And possibly toward the latter part of this interview, if we can discuss some research that I've done recently. I don't know if you
Great.
Had an opportunity to read any of my articles in the Idaho Observer, but I did some genealogical work and sort of
mm-hmm.
Connected some dots with some recent revelations of Otto Skorzeny, who was part of Operation Paperclip, and I was able to basically put together a genealogy, a true genealogy for the Bush clan, and they are not
wow.
even Americans.
Really?
So, he's from Germany. In fact, he was sent by Hitler, he and his father, under the name George H. Scherf, S-C-H-E-R-F-F, senior and junior. They came to work under the pretext of helping Nikola Tesla. They robbed him blind, stole his inventions, and funneled them to the Nazis through Brown Brothers Harriman, Kuhn and Loeb, Union Banking Corporation, Union Sulphur, and the Hamburg America line.
I didn't know any of that.
Oh, yes. You'll really enjoy reading my research.
Yeah.
It fits into what you have done here with this book. I've not read the whole book, but I'm very familiar with the case, and I've been, you know, doing some Evelyn Wood-type speed reading.
Great. Well,
to familiarize myself with what you have done. Definitely
yeah.
it plays into the role. And it's been confirmed also.
Yes.
Very controversial stuff.
Yeah.
Possibly we can talk about that at the back end of the show before you leave.
I probably won't be able to contribute much to it because you've done the research, and I hate to go beyond my depth and into stuff that I'm unknowledgeable about, but I'd like to hear what you have to say. Already what you've said is very, very interesting, but I did not know about this stuff.
Okay. Well, we'll get into it then. Okay,
yeah.
But we're here for your work right now, okay?
Okay.
I read, first of all, if I can begin just introducing what you said about your publishers, and Roger Cooper sounds like a really fantastic person.
Yeah.
Just what you went through getting this book out there, because no one wants to stand up to these, they're Satanists. They're madmen, they're pathological liars, and they're psychotic individuals who are running the government as an organized crime enterprise under the color of law.
That's but because they're that way, people fear them. People fear bullies, and they fear people who are evil and mean-spirited, and people capitulate to fear and cater to those who are the source of the fear. So
mm-hmm.
I agree with what you just said.
Yes. So, I mean, that's a very general appraisal, but I can back it up with tons and tons of information. And I see you have methodically, basically, or surgically, just dissected this whole issue of the war in Iraq and the pretext for the war and really the fraud of 9/11, which led us to it. You know, we know that there were documents created through the PNAC, Project for a New American Century, back in 97. They were already promoting, we need a new Pearl Harbor, we need a new Reichstag fire to catapult us into war for the military-industrial complex.
Yeah.
And I think the pretext for all of this was set up even through the Clinton administration, with the signing of NAFTA and all the corporations leaving the country. And then the offshore accounts, all of this plays into this role. And I don't want to step on your toes because we're going to talk about your work, but I found it interesting that you were able to find a publisher, someone who is obviously fearless.
There's quite a story behind this, and it's indicative of what this country has become. I don't think we have a great nation anymore, George. Don, I think we used to. I was looking at the word George here when I said, but I don't think, Don, that we have a great nation anymore. If you define a great nation as one with money and power, military power, I guess we're still great, but in all other indicators, I think you'll agree, Don, that we are no longer a great nation. But what I have to tell you about the history of this book goes in that direction, that this nation is in serious decline. I've never had trouble publishing any book of mine. I mean, I've had three books that got up to number one on the New York Times hardcover bestseller list in the area of true crime. No other American authors had more than one book that got up to number one in the area of true crime. Just a couple months ago, I don't know if you're aware, I won the Edgar Allan Poe Award,
mm-hmm.
the best true crime of the book, crime book of the year, for a record-breaking third time for Reclaiming History on the assassination of Kennedy. It's now being made into a 10-hour miniseries for HBO by Tom Hanks and his people. So I've never had trouble getting the book published. This time, as you indicated to your audience, I had a very difficult time. I had to fly back east. I won't say it was demeaning, but certainly humbling, and I had to knock on doors. And it was obvious that the publishers were fearful. They were sympathetic to what I was saying. They easily or quickly saw that the book was marketable. But they'd say things like this to me: "Mr. Bugliosi, are you sure you want to publish this book?" And then one of them put it right in black and white, too hot to handle. But like you said, I just finally got a courageous publisher, Vanguard Press. Now we go down to the audio level. The audio was never something that I ever concerned myself with. The agent or the publisher got the audio and didn't mean anything to me. Like Reclaiming History, the audio was done by Simon & Schuster. This time I get a call down from my agent in New York, says, "Vince, I can't get any audio company in America to do the audio on this book." So we had to get the British Broadcasting Corporation to do the audio on it.
Hmm.
As I'm talking to you right now, in production for the big screen is a documentary based on my book. The producers couldn't raise one penny, Don, in America for the documentary. The money had to come in from Canada. Now we go back to publicizing the book. Well, with every other book, every other true crime book, automatically, never give it a second thought, you automatically fly to New York City. That's where you start the tour. You start on the national shows there.
Mm-hmm.
If not the Today and Good Morning, which is very frequently, then you always do national television. I've done that for every single one of my other true crime books. This time, Don, I didn't fly back to New York City. Total, complete blackout. My publicist has been in business for over 30 years, had never seen a blackout like this for a book. I couldn't get on any national network or cable show. No major newspaper has reviewed the book, even up to the time that I'm talking to you right now. It got so bad, that ABC Radio actually refused to accept money from my publisher to take out a radio spot, an advertisement on ABC Radio. They wouldn't take the money. To the credit of the New York Times, which is really the pinnacle of the mainstream media,
mm-hmm.
it got so bad that they wrote an article about it, about the blackout, and my publicist thought that, oh, they were all doing high fives back there, that it was really going to open it up to the media, but it's hardly opened up the media a crack. But despite that, the book, The Prosecution of Bush for Murder, is a New York Times bestseller. Why? Because of people like you, Don, having me on the show, and the book has received tremendous word of mouth. probably better word of mouth than any other true crime book I've ever written, because there's so much anger out there against Bush, and people read the book and they just say, finally, finally. I've had some people who have told me personally, in talking to me, that have high blood pressure. They can't read more than 4 or 5 pages of the book without putting it down because they get so angry. But, Don, what does that say about the United States of America? Although over 4,000 young American soldiers and hundreds of thousands of innocent Iraqi men, women, children, and babies have died horrible, violent deaths in the war, and they're in their cold graves right now as I'm talking to you, and although I set forth in my book overwhelming evidence that Bush is the one who put these people in their graves by taking this nation to war under false pretenses, indeed a national poll showed that the majority of Americans believe Bush, quote, intentionally misled, unquote, this country into war. Unbelievably, and I say unbelievably, Don, because I can't think of any other adverb, not only is it obvious that the nation's mainstream media does not think that Bush should be prosecuted for his monumental crime, they don't even want to talk, mind you, they don't even want to talk about bringing George Bush to justice. They are terrified of my book, staying away from it the way the devil stays away from holy water. And the question I would ask you, Don, because you obviously are a very insightful, perceptive individual, how can there possibly be a situation like this in the United States of America? Is there something that I don't understand? Is the mainstream establishment media correct and I'm wrong? If so, why are they right and why am I wrong? But in answering that question, I would remind you, as you already know, this isn't China or Putin's Russia. This is the United States of America. You know, the land of the free, the home of the brave. Our most cherished constitutional right is freedom of speech and expression. In America, no man is above the law. And all these other emblematic and constitutional principles and pillars upon which this nation is supposedly based. And here I come out with, you know, a terrific true crime book written exactly like all my other true crime books, and they don't even want to talk to me. And yet Clinton, who did absolutely nothing, I don't have to tell you, Don, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, the mainstream media, including the liberal media, New York Times, Washington Post, savaged him. This grotesque, obscene Ken Starr, funded by the federal government, 7-year, $70 million effort. They impeached Clinton. They wanted to hang him from the town square at noontime. Bush does something a trillion times worse, and they don't want to even talk about bringing him to justice. Do you have any good insights on this, Don?
Yes, I've got two points I'd like to make about the media. Number one, the media is totally corporate controlled. There are about 5 corporations that own all of the media. We're talking about print media. We're talking about, and that includes book publishers, publishing houses.
Right.
Bertelsmann in Germany owns Germany, the majority of these companies. Okay, there's a clue in that. Okay.
Yeah.
Then they're totally propagandized. They're infiltrated by the CIA. Nothing goes through the CIA screeners as far as the editorial departments. And they're actually even using CIA agents as newscasters. That's how bad it's gotten. And they're bribed. We know CNN was paid some $2 billion to hush up on 2 issues, covering up 9/11 and the what is known as the Wantagate embezzlement scheme that's going on internationally. And we're talking about trillions of dollars that are being bounced around the globe like a ping pong ball. So that's one aspect of what's going on. The other aspect is that our government has been infiltrated since actually even before. We have to go back maybe 20 or 30 years before the enactment of the Federal Reserve Act and the creation of the Federal Reserve. I tracked down, and you will see this if you read some of my articles, I tracked down when the bankers actually came in and actually looked at the passenger manifests and read the lies that they told. So we had INS agents who were conspiring with foreign governments to enable these people to come in and and take over our country from within. This has been going on. The secret societies play a big role. The Masons, the Freemasons, are a big part of it. Every president we've had, going back to at least Abraham Lincoln, has been a Freemason.
Yes.
And so we are witnessing the secret societies coming together, and everything you're seeing on a global scale is nothing but a play. It's a script that's being carried out while these guys make billions and trillions of dollars murdering people, creating weapons, destroying the planet, and blaming it on us. Mm-hmm. We foot the bill for everything, and they have to cover it up. Now, when you get into attacking one of their own, right. and you will, when you read my research, you are going to be shocked as to how close these people are to Hitler, for example, and Joseph Mengele, and Reinhard Gehlen, and Martin Bormann. It's right. The same crowd. Okay.
Well, so, I've often said that we're going in the direction, unquestionably, of fascism. We haven't reached it yet, but we're certainly going in that direction. And if unfettered, we'd probably reach it.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, one thing that we have been lied to about our history, the CIA has rewritten all the history books, but they're also hiding the fact that Germany never really lost the war. They told us that they lost the war, and they stole trillions of dollars worth of gold, and this gold ended up going all over the planet, and they've been playing with it ever since.
Yeah.
Iraq has been a humongous bank robbery. There's $100 trillion that were stolen from the central bank when they went in there.
Yeah.
They're building bases all over Iraq. This is not democracy. They tell us we're a democratic country, and we're having our civil rights taken away from us. Every
right.
aspect of the Constitution
absolutely.
The Bill of Rights is being violated.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I don't know if I'm answering your question.
Well, no, you're given a very intellectual, broad view of this whole thing, things that I'm not even solidly grounded on, so I can't even carry on an intelligent conversation with you on it, but I don't dispute anything that you're saying. Let me just add a couple little more prosaic interpretations, and of course I don't know the answers to any of these things, but there are some other things more easy to understand. What you're saying is more complex, more arcane, and is probably the true answer. But on a more simple level,
mm-hmm.
the left-leaning media in this country are just completely spineless. In my book, I refer to them as physiological marvels, who are somehow able to sit erect in front of the camera without a spine. And they don't want me on the show because on their shows, because the left fears the right in America. The right has no fear of the left, but the left fears the right. And if they had me on, they'd be savaged by the right. The right has its own fears by not having me on, because they don't want to give me a forum in front of millions of their viewers, telling their viewers that their guy, the guy they love so much, is guilty of murder and probably should end up on death row. Three people, independently of each other, Don, told me why I wasn't on these shows, and it's something that I hadn't thought about, and the three told me separately, and I'm just condensing their words, Mr. Bugliosi, they're not putting you on this show, these shows, because of who you are. And I said, what do you mean by that? And they said, well, if some nut had written a book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder, they'd probably have them on because they're a joke, it's colorful, it's entertaining, it would be dismissed very easily, but no one dismisses you, Mr. Bugliosi. You know, I write very serious true crime books about the major crimes of the 20th century. The Manson case, which of course I prosecuted, the Simpson case, the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, and in every one of these books, Don, these true crime books, I prove my case beyond a reasonable doubt. So the right wing is probably saying, without even reading the book, that if this is a typical Bugliosi book, he probably proves Bush's guilt beyond all reasonable doubt. So they don't want to help me in that effort. But it goes back to what you're saying, that Bush is one of this group, and they are aligned with him in some incestuous fashion, although it's not easily seen, at a quick glance, and you're going into the genesis of all this.
Yes, it's provable. It's provable.
So they're somehow associated with him, but certainly not Clinton. They had no hesitancy about going after Bill Clinton. You agree on that, don't you?
Yes. And I think, well, you know, one thing you have to understand, too, is that because of the corruption that's going on behind the scenes, these, you know, the Paula Jones affair and the Jennifer Flowers deal and Catherine Willey and all of these accusations that came out, they were all smoke screens for tremendous financial corruption that was going on.
Yeah.
See, while that was occurring, there was major theft going on.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you had the Vince Foster murder, which was tied into this money laundering.
Yes.
And Kenneth Starr was working. He was a legal counsel for the Children's Defense Fund for Hillary Clinton, and she had just received $250 million a couple of days before Foster was murdered. And that has
you have evidence of that?
Oh, yes.
That Hillary Hillary Clinton herself got $250 million?
Ambassador Lee Emile Wanta described $83 million payments, three of them that went into Vince Foster's hands in Switzerland. He met with him in Switzerland, gave him the money, brought it back to Children's Defense Fund.
Wow.
Gave it to Hillary Clinton. So you wonder why Kenneth Starr's case didn't go anywhere, why they demoted Michael Rodriguez, who got a sex change and a demotion to prosecutor's office in Sacramento or somewhere around there. Michelle Rodriguez now. I mean, it was just a total perversion of not just the law, but sanity, period.
But this country, and I think you agree with me, is getting to be a scary place. Not greatly so, but it's getting to be scary. More than one person has told me that for the first time in their lives, and I feel the same way, they no longer feel completely comfortable in this country. Let me give you an example of what happened to me a couple weeks ago. I testified before the House Judiciary Committee in front of Congress and the John Conyers Committee, and supposedly it was the title of the hearing was Executive Power and Its Constitutional Limitations, but there was a subtext of impeachment, and Representative Kucinich was there. He's been trying to get Bush impeached, so he started out. He was on the panel. There was about 20 of us on the panel. And everything was quiet, and they all said what they had to say. And I had told Conyers' assistant beforehand, I said, listen, I don't want to shock you people when I get back there. I said, I'm not going to be coming back there to talk about executive power, and I'm not talking about impeachment. I'm talking about murder. And they said, fine, come back. So they get to me. This is on July 25th. And I speak for about 5 minutes, and then I said something. I don't know what it was. Anyway, the chambers just erupted. They started cheering and clapping and everything. And the Republican to Conyers' left, Lamar Smith, the ranking minority guy from Texas, he tried to have the whole chambers cleared. He didn't even want them in there. So then I go on, and then there's at a point, you've heard of Cindy Sheehan, Don?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
Well, she got up. She was in the gallery, and she said, thank you, Vince, and they proceeded to throw her out. I don't mean physically, but I mean they grabbed her and escorted her out. And then more importantly, there was a time when I was presenting the actual evidence to show that Bush took this nation to war under false pretenses. And I was showing them two documents. And I said, this document here, this is a classified top secret document, October 1st, 2002. And it said, blah, blah, blah. And I said, now this document here, the white paper, which is what you folks got, called them folks, all of these important things were deleted from this white paper. And I was laying it out, and Smith again said, I heard him, but I didn't hear his words. Apparently, it's all over YouTube, but this five-minute thing of mine got about 140,000 hits. He said, if you don't stop him, he tells Conyers, if you don't stop him, I'm going to have, talking about himself, I'm going to have an aneurysm. Well, you see, what's going on here, Don, is these people are much more Republican than they are American, and they do not want to know the truth. And when I was laying out the truth in front of a national audience, he literally tried to shut me down.
Well, they don't want us to know the truth. That's,
no,
I think they do know the truth.
Yeah,
I think it's... Now, if you would explain to me, I know this, or for the sake of the listening audience, in fact, that video is posted on the BBS site, underneath your biography on our homepage at bbsradio.com. I don't suggest any listeners.
See, I don't even have a computer, so I don't know these things, but people tell me this stuff.
Yeah, but we've had that there since we booked you for the show. You've been up on our site for about 2 weeks now.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't know that.
We have a big listening audience tonight, I'm trusting, because this has gone out all over the country. I noticed that they said, now you are not to use the term George W. Bush. You're supposed to say the Bush administration, as if you're depersonalizing this.
Well, it was worse than that. They let me know, and I'm glad you brought that up, Don. They let me know in no uncertain terms that I could not accuse Bush of a crime in my testimony before Congress, nor could I accuse him of any dishonorable conduct. So I was handcuffed. And I said, you know, I'll do the best I can, but this does not make for the best articulation. So every time I was about to say George Bush, I had to say the Bush administration or Bush administration officials. But that's what this country is coming to, Don, and it's scary. At some point, I'd like to just briefly go over just some of the evidence that I have against this what I call a despicable human being, George Bush. And let me assure your audience that if there's one word that's been used to describe me, Don, more than any other word by my peers, and it's the word credibility. Credibility means everything to me. My only master, my only mistress are the facts and objectivity. And I can give your audience, I'm sure you've got some conservatives and independents and liberals out there, I can give them a 100% guarantee that if a Democratic president had done what George Bush did, I would have written the same identical book. Now, whether they believe me or not, I don't know. But if we have time, I'd like to get into some of the evidence that I have against this guy.
I would like to do that right now.
Okay.
Why not?
let's go to that document that I held up in front of Congress.
Okay.
I have documentary evidence. And by the way, Don, what I'm about to tell you, to my knowledge, has never appeared in any major newspaper or magazine in America. Why, I don't know. Probably just pure incompetence. I have documentary evidence that when George Bush told the nation on the evening of October the 7th, 2002, Cincinnati, Ohio, that Hussein was an imminent threat to the security of this country, he was telling millions of unsuspecting Americans the exact opposite of what his own CIA had told him just 6 days earlier, Don, on October the 1st, in a top-secret classified document, that Hussein was not an imminent threat to the security of this country. And it gets worse. It gets worse. October 4th, 3 days later, the Bush administration put out an unclassified summary version of this October 1st classified report so they could give it to Congress and the American people. Congress was about to vote in 7 days, October 11th, on whether to authorize Bush to go to war in Iraq. This unclassified version, Don, came to be known as the White Paper. And in this White Paper, Don, the conclusion of U.S. intelligence, actually 16 U.S. intelligence agencies, the main agency being the CIA, the conclusion of U.S. intelligence that Hussein was not an imminent threat to the security of this country was completely deleted from that white paper. That's what I showed Congress. I had this document right here that you folks got, that conclusion was completely deleted. Every single one of those all-important words, Don, was taken out. So Congress and the American people never saw any of that. And the question that I have, Don, you know, we're talking about the lives of millions of people hanging in the balance at that point. And Congress just about to vote on whether to authorize Bush to go to war. And these people deliberately deleted that all-important conclusion from that white paper, which went out to Congress and the American people. And the question I have, Don, is how evil, how perverse, how sick, how criminal can George Bush and his people be? And yet, unbelievably, they got away with all of that. By the way, I just want to go off on one little tangent, because it's an important one. June 15th, Don, I'm here at my home in L.A. I get a call from a very conservative Republican congressman from the South who heard my book on tape. Thank God for the BBC. I told you earlier that the BBC did the tape for my book.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Mr. Bugliosi, I want you to know, this guy voted for the war, was one of the most outspoken supporters of the war. He said, Mr. Bugliosi, you've proved in the book we were lied to. Bush took the nation to war under false pretenses. He misled Congress. He said, I bought several copies of your book. In fact, I spoke to him today a couple hours earlier. He's still buying copies and passing it out. He said, I'm handing it to colleagues in Congress, telling them, read the book. We've been lied to. He's coming up for re-election, but he told me, come November, he said, I want to be at your side when this man is indicted for first-degree murder. In other words, after the election. But it was this information that he read where important things were deleted from the main document, were deleted in the white paper. I'll just mention one other thing. In the main document, the classified document, in the area of nuclear weapons, there were several important dissents. In the white paper, all of those dissents were deleted. So this congressman who's got a conscience, he's a very conservative guy, very religious, he saw this and he says, my God, this man lied and took this nation to war on a lie. And he was just telling me tonight, he said, you know, I want future presidents to know that they cannot lie to this country and take this nation to war under false pretenses, because if they do, they're going to have to pay a price. Let me give you words, Don, from George Bush's own mouth, that proved he knew he was lying when he told the American people that Hussein was an imminent threat to the security of this country. The date is July 31st, 2003. He has a meeting in the Oval Office with British Prime Minister Tony Blair and six of their top aides for 2 hours. And one of Blair's top aides that was there was his chief foreign policy advisor, David Manning. This is not the Downing Street memo, by the way. The Downing Street memo got a lot of attention. It's kind of ambiguous. If I were to prosecute Bush, it would be introduced, but not that powerful. But this Manning memo received very, very, very little attention. In Europe, over in England it did, but not over here. I only saw it once, back page of the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
The Manning, after the meeting, Manning prepared a 5-page memo, Don, stamped extremely sensitive, in which he summarized what was said at the meeting. Among other things, listen to this, Don. Among other things, he said that George Bush, not talking about Blair now, George Bush, was so worried about the failure of UN inspectors to find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq that he, referring to Bush, started talking about three possible ways to, quote, provoke a confrontation, unquote, with Hussein, one of which, Bush said, was to, quote, fly U-2 reconnaissance aircraft over Iraq, painted, obviously falsely, painted in United Nations colors, and if Hussein fired on them, Bush said, he'd be in violation of UN resolutions, and that would justify our going to war. So, Don, here we have a situation where George Bush is telling the American people, telling the world, that Hussein is an imminent threat to the security of this country. But behind closed doors, this very small man is talking about how to provoke Hussein into a war. Now, Don, if Bush honestly believed that Hussein was an imminent threat to the security of this country, which is the main reason he gave the American people going to war, by definition, the thought of provoking Hussein into a war would never, ever, ever have entered his mind. I was on the radio show Dennis Miller. I've known him for years, and I poke fun of Dennis in the book because he fell hopelessly in love with the Republican Party at the time of 9/11. In any event, I'm on Miller's show about 3 weeks ago, and I said, Dennis, I said, you're the defense attorney for George Bush. And the prosecutor called David Manning to the stand to testify to what your guy said on January the 31st, 2003, the Manning memo, David Manning. I said, Dennis, other than trying to hide beneath the console table, I said, how would you respond to the Manning memo and David Manning's testimony? And Dennis is pretty bright and pretty quick. He said, I'd ask for a recess. Well, Don, no matter how long that recess took, whether it was, you know, an hour, a day, a week, or a month, there is no answer to the Manning memo except guilt. And the main legal issue at the trial, and at this very moment, literally, not at this moment, but I mean today and every day, I'm looking for a prosecutor out there to bring George Bush to justice. There's an enormous number of prosecutors out there that I've established jurisdiction for. I went off on a tangent, and then I forgot where I was. Don't get old, Don, because you go off on a tangent and you forget, where was I? you go off on these tributaries and you forget where you were. I forget what point that I was going to make. I don't even know what points I was going to make.
Well, you were talking about the pretext for setting up the war. Maybe this will get you back on track. I did have a question.
Yeah, okay.
Are you speaking about the time when Joe Wilson was actually the ambassador to Iraq, I believe, at that time?
Oh, no, that was way earlier than that.
Was that earlier?
Oh, yeah, way earlier than that. And then, as you know, the CIA sent him over to Niger to find out whether Hussein was trying to purchase uranium over there, and he came back, as you know, and said, no, there's no truth to it. And he wrote this op-ed piece in the New York Times, and then they outed his wife, who was a Secret Service agent.
CIA agent.
No, we're talking about something else. But I went off on this tangent, but as long as I'm off on this tangent, let me explain to you that I've established jurisdiction for close to 3,000 prosecutors in this country to prosecute George Bush once he leaves office. He's got temporary immunity right now. On a federal level, as on a state level, he can be prosecuted for two crimes, conspiracy to commit murder and murder. Federally, Don, we're only talking about one prosecutor, the Attorney General, Washington, D.C., operating through his attorney, through his Department of Justice. Why do I say only one? Well, there are 93 U.S. attorneys around the country who theoretically could prosecute Bush, but they're not going to do that without the consent of their boss in Washington, D.C., and it's just totally unrealistic that they would do that. So federally, we're only talking about one prosecutor. But on a state level, I've established jurisdiction. I've spent many, many hours at the L.A. County Law Library and the Ninth Circuit Law Library because I knew that jurisdiction would be a key issue in this case. I've established jurisdiction for the Attorney General, Don, in each of the 50 states, plus the, listen to this, 2,700 district attorneys in counties within those states to prosecute Bush for the murder of any soldier or soldiers from their state or county who died fighting George Bush's war in Iraq. Now, with all those prosecutors out there talking about, you know, at least 2,750 prosecutors, although there wouldn't be that many who have had citizens of their county. Certainly, citizens of every state have died in the war, but there are many counties out there who have not lost a soldier in Iraq. But we're talking about well over, let's say, 2,000 prosecutors out there. With all those prosecutors out there, and with all the evidence of guilt that I present in this book, and I've just touched on some of it here, I don't think it's unreasonable to believe, Don, that at least one prosecutor out there, maybe many more, will be courageous enough to step forward and say, hey, you know, this is the United States of America, the evidence of Bush's guilt is clear, and I'm going to go after him and bring about justice for the American people. Is there a high probability of this? Probably not, but I think as a direct result of this book, there's a substantial likelihood that Bush is going to end up one day in an American courtroom. I can tell you right now because I get letters from people that have read the book and they're buying a copy and sending it to their local DA or the state attorney general.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in touch with certain people around the country. This may happen, and you know there's no statute of limitations for the crime of murder. Pinochet down in Chile, 33 years later, they brought murder charges against him, and he died, and that aborted the prosecution. So this is something that's not just a fanciful reverie on my part. This is something that actually could happen.
Mm-hmm. I have a question, Vince.
Yeah.
If I can call you Vince.
Yeah, of course. I'm calling you Don. Oh. You call me Vince. Yeah.
Okay.
Nothing special about me.
Oh no. You're a very special prosecutor. Let's put it
that
way. Well,
I was pretty successful as a prosecutor. You know, 21 murder convictions without a loss, and 105 out of 106 felony jury trials. But you know, I used to tell people because they were so impressed with that. I said, "Listen, these people were all guilty." You know, I was supposed to convict them.
Yeah.
But go ahead, buddy. Go ahead, Don. Well, you had a question.
Yes, I was going to ask you. You know, the pretext for all of this, the pretext for going after Hussein, and they, of course, we were fed this lie that he had given Haven to Osama bin Laden, and I've written about the meeting in Sherman Oaks, California, back in 1986 at the Hilton Hotel. They met with Osama bin Laden, Ted Gunderson, who was at the time the Los Angeles
FBI guy.
He was a special. He was the head of the Los Angeles division of the FBI.
Right.
Supervisory special agent was his title.
Right.
Ralph Olberg was there. Michael Reconosciuto, who they have behind bars, he was involved in the theft of the Inslaw's Promise software that the Justice Department stole from Bill Hamilton's Inslaw company in Washington, D.C. Still hasn't been paid the money, even though he received a judgment, $6.8 million judgment against the Justice Department. They're using this software for international money laundering. Bin Laden family has been a business partner of the Bushes even before that. In fact, on 9/11, they secreted the Bin Laden family out of Texas.
Yes.
Via airplane.
Yeah, I heard that.
Now the pretext for the war and for going after bin Laden and Saddam Hussein was who was behind 9/11. All of the evidence shows, and you have to trust that my listening audience, as well as the listening audiences on many Patriot networks, many of whose shows I've been on and presented evidence, there's even a paper trail now to 9/11. I've discovered a paper trail.
Okay.
So, and this is exclusive of the airline industry.
Yeah.
And it's directly related to the NSA, Homeland Security, FEMA, all of these agencies that they created out of the event of 9/11. What about the murder that occurred there? I I'm not belittling what you have written by any means. It's the precursor to continued murder on other parts of the planet.
Yeah, now, when you say who is behind 9/11, you're not excluding bin Laden, are you?
I don't think bin Laden had anything to do with it. I think it was
okay.
Bush and Cheney. Dick Cheney was behind that. Donald Rumsfeld, Karl Rove.
But I mean, who actually perpetrated 9/11? Even if Bush and his people were behind it,
I would say the Israeli Mossad were involved in that. You know.
Who was in it?
The Israeli Mossad definitely was involved,
okay.
and we have proof of that. They caught the urban movers, the dancing Israelis who were videotaping the event. They arrested them in New Jersey and released them, sent them back to Israel. This is just a fraction of some of the evidence that's out there. I mean,
yeah,
we know they use scalar weapons to bring those buildings down. This was not a terrorist attack. This was not some cave-dwelling, I don't want to use the term, but some people call them camel jockeys, you know.
Yeah.
This was not something that was orchestrated. In fact, Dr. Qasem Khalil wrote a book called Wrongly Blamed, and he's tracked down some of these so-called box-cutting terrorists that Bush, as recently as yesterday, and today claim before the VFW were responsible for the hijacking of those planes. Those planes were not hijacked.
Mm-hmm.
The evidence is overwhelming that planes did not hit buildings.
Well, I can tell you that several people have said to me, I don't know how many, but no less than three or four have said to me, Mr. Bugliosi, you get to the bottom of everything. like on the Kennedy assassination, I don't have to tell you there's over 10,000 citations in my book. It's the equivalent of 13 volumes of 400-page books. Talk about reclaiming history. In any event, they said, when you're all through with this something about Bush. Will you please write a book about 9/11 because we don't think it happened the way we've been told it's going to happen. So I don't have any position on that, and you've studied this, and I don't want to state anything or form any opinion without going over the evidence. But I have been it's been suggested to me by several people that I do a book on 9/11 because they said there's a lot that has not surfaced. Normally, I hear the story that Bush was complicit with bin Laden. Now, you're changing the equation and removing bin Laden. The one thing that I have mentioned to those people who say that Bush was complicit with bin Laden, and I have no opinion because I haven't studied this.
Yes.
But I do mention a couple points, one of which would not apply to you because you removed bin Laden from the equation. But I mentioned two points. When I quote prosecuted Lee Harvey Oswald in London against Jerry Spence, the famous defense lawyer from Wyoming, it was 21 hours on film over there. We had the real Warren Commission witnesses, no script, no actors. Spence and I worked on it for about 5 months apiece, and we treated it just like a regular murder case, a regular judge, the original Warren Commission witnesses. And one thing I said to the jury when Spence was talking about the possibility of a conspiracy, I said, you know, folks, I said, I'll stipulate that three people can keep a secret. I said, I will agree with you on that, but only if two are dead. And this is something that I've tossed out to those who talk about 9/11 being this vast conspiracy. It's very, very, very difficult to keep a conspiracy quiet. The second point that would not apply to you because you've removed bin Laden, but I'm talking about people who think that Bush was complicit with bin Laden. You're aware that bin Laden was at Tora Bora. You're aware of that, are you not?
Oh, absolutely I am, yes.
Yeah, okay. Now, he was trapped there. Even if he wasn't there, and the evidence seems overwhelming that he was there, that's really not the relevant point because the United States government thought that he was there. And as you know, the United States government bombed, the Air Force bombed Tora Bora. I think Tora Bora was in, the southeastern mountain range of Afghanistan, hard
that's
by
correct.
The Pakistani border.
Correct.
But they didn't send one single American soldier to go after bin Laden. They sent 50 special advisors to coordinate the air attacks, but they relied on the Afghan warlords to send their troops up there to get bin Laden and the Pakistani military to prevent bin Laden from escaping over into the Pakistani, escape to Pakistan. So I've told these people that think that bin Laden may have been complicit with Bush, I said, if he was, I said, wouldn't Bush have wanted to eliminate bin Laden because bin Laden would know that he was complicit with him, and they don't seem to have too much of an answer to that, although one of them said that Bush was very close to bin Laden's family and his father. I don't know if the father is still alive, and that he couldn't kill bin Laden because the father would not let him. But you have to agree that if bin Laden was complicit with Bush, Bush wouldn't want this fact to come out. If he had an opportunity to silence bin Laden, he would have done that. And going off again on a little tangent, if we assume that bin Laden was involved in 9/11, and as far as I know, he was the one behind it, but I could be wrong. If he was behind 9/11, then he's responsible for 3,000 American murders. And Bush doesn't send one single solitary troop up those mountains to get the guy responsible for 3,000 murders, yet he sends 150,000 American soldiers to go after Hussein, who was not an enemy of this country and had nothing to do with 9/11, and was as much of a threat to security of this country, Don, as you or I or an aunt of mine who lives up in Minnesota. So how can you make rhyme or reason of that he doesn't send one troop to go after the guy who he says was responsible for 3,000 murders, not one troop, but 150,000 to go after a guy who had nothing to do with 9/11?
Okay, let me throw something at you. Let's say, for example, that you or whoever is thinking that Bin Laden was involved with Bush, and that he was behind this. Okay, right. I will present another theory to you, but I will I will ask you: are you familiar with a meeting that took place in Manila, Philippines, on November 1st, 2001?
No. Who met with whom?
Okay, one of there was a Dr. Navarro. There was a Madam Eva Teleki, who is a Hungarian. She's a Hungarian aristocrat. Dr. Navarro, I would presume, is a Filipino individual, probably has a lot of money. They met with one of Bin Laden's lieutenants. His name was Datu Ben Abu, and they met with some FBI agents. And Ambassador Leo Emil Wanta wrote a memo to Dick Cheney describing everybody wants their boxes. The boxes are disappearing. Everybody wants their boxes. And there was an exchange of Stinger missiles and computer software, just like the 1986 meeting with Osama bin Laden, the one I described with Ted Gunderson, Ralph Oberg, and Michael Reconosciuto. Now, at that time, bin Laden went by the alias Tim Osman. He was clean-shaven, dressed in American-style clothes. And my understanding is Ted Gunderson didn't know that was Osama bin Laden, or the character who was to become Osama bin Laden.
Right.
So they met with this individual, Datu Ben Abu, and a memo was sent to Cheney. Cheney forwarded the memo to Condoleezza Rice, and she forwarded it to Bush. And they were describing payoffs that were taking place. There were Chinese Stinger missiles. These are wired ground-to-air missiles. Red mercury was mentioned in it. I've got the handwritten copies of this. These were on the Internet. Now, one could consider that these might be disinformation, but I've also talked to people in the intelligence community that said, yes, that meeting went down. Okay, that was less than 2 months.
No, I didn't know anything about this. This is all new to me, what you're telling me.
Now, why would they meet with one of bin Laden's people if they were trying to capture him? In fact, I was asked, as an intuitive, to look to see where bin Laden was. And I advised the person who had asked me that he's in the Tora Bora Mountains. He was hiding in a mosque about 15 miles southeast of Kabul. And Tommy Franks was in charge of that operation.
Right.
And I said, I predicted bin Laden's going to get away. And he said, how do you know if you're so sure where he is? How do you know he's going to get away? I said, because they want him to get away. They don't want their boogeyman caught. So this is just an exercise.
I got a quote in the book, if I can find it here, that you may be interested in, where he's at Tora Bora. Well, why don't you keep talking, and I'll look for a quote here about the Tora Bora thing.
I have the great Vincent Bugliosi on my show, and he wants me to talk.
Well, listen, the people are learning probably more from you than they are from me. Oh, here I found it. It's on page 214 of the book. The job of capturing bin Laden was given to three anti-Taliban Afghan warlords and their men. Haji Mohammed Zaman, one of the warlords, in disbelief and frustration, told the assembled press. Now, this was in, it would be December of 2001. Told the assembled press who had converged on Tora Bora, and this is compatible with what you just said, Don, quote, if America wants to capture Osama, why aren't they trying, unquote. A top aide to Zaman said, quote, I don't think the United States wants to capture Osama. We know where he is, we tell them, and they do nothing, so they are not as serious as they say they are, unquote, which is totally consistent with what you're saying. But I have these quotes that we did not go after bin Laden at Tora Bora, except to bomb Tora Bora. But we let him go, and it's been subsequently established that he paid his way out of Tora Bora to, let me read what I say about that. I don't know, how to pronounce these names. Lotfullah Mashal, a senior spokesperson for the Afghanistan Interior Ministry, confirmed in 2005 what everyone already assumed, that bin Laden had paid for his escape from Tora Bora into Pakistan, But the recipients of the money were not the Pakistani military, as some had assumed, but Afghan commanders loyal to Maulvi Yunus Khalis. Khalis was a top Mujahideen. I don't even know how to pronounce that word. See, one thing about not watching TV or listening to radio, Don, you just see the name in print, but you don't know how to pronounce these words.
Well, they don't know how to pronounce it on the media either, so don't.
Oh, they don't?
Yeah, no, they don't.
But I'm still in the 19th century with a yellow pad and pencil. I don't have a computer or cell phone or anything. Anyway, Mujahideen leader, Khalis was a top, that's not how they pronounce it. How do you pronounce that word, Don? M-U-J-A-H-E-D-I-N.
They say Mujahideen.
Okay, Mujahideen leader. During the Afghan-Soviet War, whose family compound Bin Laden, with his four wives and many children, moved into for a while, Mashal said, quote, the help was provided because of monetary aid provided by Al-Qaeda and also partly because of ideological issues, and I have in parentheses, among which, naturally, was the fact that everyone on both sides was Muslim, in print. In 2005, August Hanning, the head of German intelligence, confirmed this, saying his agency had learned that Bin Laden had been able to elude capture at Tora Bora by paying, quote, a lot of money, unquote, to the very same militias of the Afghan warlords to whom the United States had delegated, paren, outsourced, in paren, the task of capturing him, and they allowed his safe passage into Pakistan. So it gets murkier and murkier, Don.
And, yes, I was asked to intuit on a couple occasions where he might be, and I came up with Uzbekistan. And then several weeks later, there was an article that came out in one of the major media magazines. It was either Newsweek or Time, one of those, that he had been spotted up in Uzbekistan. Isn't that interesting that I can be here in Ohio and see that and describe that in such detail? But it's their boogeyman. Now, we also know that he had been treated for a kidney ailment in 2004. It was a female doctor who had treated him.
Yeah.
In an American hospital, and he's been given cash numerous times. He's been given red mercury. He's been given Stinger missiles. This goes back to the Afghan War. This had been going on, but there was such an exchange on November 1st of 2001. Uh-huh. There was a memo sent to Cheney about people wanting their boxes. Now, writer Christopher Story from WorldReports.org, International Currency Review, who reported extensively on Wantagate, insists that that reference to boxes was weapons. I think it was cash, is what I think, possibly gold. That this was a gold heist.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say there was a massive gold heist from the lower levels of the World Trade Center on 9/11. 2,340 metric tons is what
I heard about that. I heard about that. Yeah.
And that was money.
That's something I have heard about.
Yes, and of course Larry Silverstein. Frank Lowy of Westfield Properties in Australia had the concessions along with Silverstein. And he turns around shortly after some settlement was made after 9/11 and bought 8 malls from Dick Jacobs, former owner of the Cleveland Indians, around the country.
Yeah.
A multi-million dollar deal. and then all of a sudden we have this Australian company controlling our malls. The money laundering and the, you know, the put options, but it goes beyond that. There were many, many communications companies that were developed out of this. And I can tell you off the air, if you're interested in going into it in detail, I can connect this.
Right
totally.
Now, I'm up over my head. I'm preparing for the Democratic National Convention and everything, but at some time I definitely would like to read what you've written. Obviously, you've done a tremendous amount of research on this, and it's impressive. This place where you think Bin Laden is, are you saying that that's where you think he is now?
I think he's died, to tell you
the
truth.
Oh, you think he's died? Okay, all right.
Yes, in fact, when they put these Bin Laden tapes on TV, there's a code, and it has to do with the date they release the tape. They always release a Bin Laden tape. They mask the voiceover, and then they do an English voiceover on top of it, and so you can't hear what he's actually saying. It makes it look like he's up in the mountains exhorting his Al-Qaeda followers to attack the United States. That's the spin they put on it. And then anywhere from a day, sometimes even the same day, or weeks later, they come out with a second tape. I've been able to predict when false flag events are going to occur. And I can give you specificity on this, and I can show you that that this actually occurred.
Yeah.
So it's a signal. Those tapes are a signal to each other around the globe as to when the next false flag event is going to take place.
That's very interesting. The conventional wisdom, as you know, is that he's presently residing in the tribal and lawless badlands of northwestern Pakistan, which is right next to Tora Bora, the southeastern part of Afghanistan. And that apparently is a very rugged and dense mountain range with jagged peaks. And Mushtarif, if that's the way you pronounce his name, either was deliberately giving bin Laden a safe haven there, or he didn't want to give him a safe haven, but there was nothing he could do about it. But now you're saying that he's not even there.
I really don't feel he's there. Many people feel that he has died.
I think I heard that supposition too.
I guess it wouldn't even matter if he was alive or dead. He had nothing to do with it. You know, he's the Lee Harvey Oswald of 9/11, let's say.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, so, do we I can't agree or disagree with you on the 9/11 thing, because one of my strengths is that I know my weaknesses, and I'm not in a position to talk to you about 9/11. You've done an enormous amount of research, but I can speak with a certain amount of authority about George Bush taking this nation to war on a lie and under false pretenses, and therefore he's a despicable human being and a murderer, and I want him brought to justice. I told the House Judiciary Committee, I said that the terrible reality is that the Bush administration officials, I couldn't say George Bush, have gotten away with thousands upon thousands of murders, and we, America, the American people, cannot let them get away with this. And yet, at this moment, they seem to be getting away with it. No one's doing anything about it. But I'm out there, and people are saying how courageous I am and everything like that. I hear that all the time. I've heard that throughout my career. And Don, I can tell you, I'm not a courageous guy. I'm motivated solely by anger. I have an enormous animus towards George Bush. I do not want to see him get away with murder, particularly since he's enjoyed himself throughout this whole thing. How dare he? How dare he dance and play and have fun while these young kids are being blown to pieces? And Don, they're coming back in boxes. You know, when they die because of a roadside bomb, literally the bodies are blown to pieces a lot of times, and the troops that are designated to send the body back, they literally have to put the pieces back together again. Sometimes they can't even find the pieces. And the bodies come back in a box, Don. And the Defense Department tells the families, do not open the box. They advise them not to open the box because the contents are, quote, unviewable, unquote. That's the military term, unviewable. And this guy, Bush, is saying, Laura and I are having the time of our life. So I'm going after this guy. Now, whether I succeed or not, you know, I do not want this guy to get away with murder. People are always asking me, they're saying, Mr. Lugosi, you know, he went after Charles Manson, got the death penalty against him, and they want me to compare Manson with Bush. And, of course, I was in a courtroom with Manson for 9 months. I tell them that Manson obviously was a very evil person, and that he committed these terrible, terrible crimes, and he therefore forfeited his right to live, deserved the death penalty, which I got against him, and then the Supreme Court set aside that death penalty, not just against Manson, but about 600 people on death row at the time. But prosecutors are not supposed to get personally involved in cases, or I shouldn't say personally involved, of course they get personally involved, but they're not supposed to get emotional about cases. They're supposed to be somewhat aloof, because they feel if you get emotionally involved, it could cloud your vision. And certainly the survivors of the victims, it's very personal. with them, and understandably so. But prosecutors are supposed to remain somewhat distant, and I was somewhat distant towards Manson. I just had a job to put this guy away, and actually I asked for the death penalty against him because he deserved the death penalty for what he did. And I also knew that if he got out, he was going to continue to kill. I mean, Manson was going to kill as many people as he could.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who knew Manson better than I did, because he lived with him, little Paul Watkins, he's dead now, he said, Vince, he says, death is Charlie's trip. So he was going to kill as many people as he could. So that was my state of mind towards Manson. Bush is not evil in the sense that he wants to kill anyone, but he's a despicable human being who couldn't care less about the deaths of thousands upon thousands of people. Couldn't care less. He's extremely cold-blooded, extremely self-absorbed. I don't think this guy has any redeeming human characteristics. And I can tell you that it's personal with me, as opposed to Manson or all the other murderers whom I prosecuted throughout the years. This thing with Bush and me is personal now. Because we're talking about maybe a million people, Don, in their graves, decomposing as I'm talking to you right now. And this guy has enjoyed himself throughout the entire war, had fun, had a ball. And I'm just extremely angry. And so it's personal with me.
I remember when he landed on that aircraft carrier and they had this big banner, mission accomplished. And it makes you ask the question, it makes any rational person ask the question, what mission are you talking about? What is the mission? What is the mission?
Right.
And from that moment on, it seemed like things got worse. The American soldiers were dropping like flies, and I don't mean to demean their service and their sacrifice, but they've been lied to. You know, we could get into all the sinister vaccines that they're being given, depleted uranium, the way they're being disrespected when they come back. They're actually being backcharged on leaving the military with a disability, paying for education or paying for their training, paying for their supplies. This money is, if it is being collected from them or withheld from them, it's going into the pockets of these criminals. It's not going into any system.
Here's something you may or may not know about that I talk about in the book, because most people who have read it were just absolutely shocked, and it's consistent with what you're saying. Are you aware, Don, that at the time of the $1.3 trillion tax break for wealthy in America, this was in 2003, are you aware that right around the same identical time, Bush and his people tried to remove $75 extra in combat pay for the soldiers dying over there? Were you aware of that?
No, I wasn't.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. Not everyone over there would get the combat pay. You had to be in a combat zone. So they would pay $75 a month extra. And the amount of money that these poor kids got over there, very, very low, about $1,000. But many of these kids come from low-income families, so even $1,000 a month was a lot. But they would pay them an extra $75 a month if they were in a combat zone. And these very, I'm being sarcastic, these very patriotic, flag-waving Americans who love America so much, I'm talking about Bush and his people, they literally tried to take away that $75 a month. At the same time they were given a $1.3 trillion tax break to the super wealthy, they tried to eliminate that $75 a month in combat pay, and then there was such a so much criticism in the Army Times, and their editorials started attacking the Bush administration, that they withdrew their attempt to delete that $75 combat pay, the little extra pay for those who were dying and fighting for them, not for America, but for Rove and Cheney and Bush. But what does that say about these people, Don? Doesn't that make them despicable human beings? They're already despicable. Okay? But can you imagine that?
And when you
describe that, $75 a month. Pardon?
Yeah. When you describe that, I'm thinking of a story that I read, and I reported this on one of my news shows, that I do a weekly news show on BBS Radio on Wednesday afternoon at 1 o'clock. You know, it's called the TNT Hour, and I bring non-mainstream news to the table. And I recall a couple of weeks ago coming across a story where there's a CIA office, which is a direct link to Halliburton. It's basically a Halliburton office run by the CIA in the White House and one in the Pentagon. And they stole 1,000 toasters from a warehouse in Indiana, where related to the manufacturer of these toasters. And they cost on the market $19.95. They billed the Pentagon, or they billed the American taxpayers, $1,891 per toaster.
Well, you're aware that Halliburton overbilled the Army over $100 million. And Bush found out about it. You know what he said? Well, they're going to have to pay it back. Can you imagine if some robber held up a bank and got $100 million, and the DA of the local county says, well, if you give it back, you can go on your way? This is not a good country anymore, Don. It's a scary country, and we're one Supreme Court justice away from turning this country completely around. And I point out in the book, you know, we got two right-wing zanies up there. I'm talking about Scalia and Thomas, and then two right-wingers. We don't know if they're zanies quite yet. One moderate Republican and four ordinary, sensible people. So it's 5-4. But if there's another conservative justice that's appointed, this country will start incrementally going in a terrible direction. And hypothetically, if you can imagine a situation where the police enter a home at night without a search warrant, even though they had time to get one. They had time to get one, but they decided to break in anyway. And the Supreme Court, and I'm not saying that even five right-wing justices would so rule, but if they ruled that this did not violate the Fourth Amendment prohibition against unreasonable searches and seizures, if the police entered a home at night or any time of the day without a search warrant, you realize that overnight this nation would change. And we're that close to a new country. Already we're going in a terrible direction. I think we're in perilous descent. I don't know what's going to stop it. But I'll say this about my book and about what I'm trying to do here. If we want this nation, Don, to become the great nation it once was, we can hardly do it unless we take the first step of bringing those responsible for the war in Iraq to justice. And I think, and I hope you agree, that this would help our image around the world. As you know, for the first time ever now, the majority of people in the Western world look down upon us. But don't you think that if Bush were prosecuted for murder over here, that that would improve our image around the world?
Oh, it certainly would. In fact, they're wondering why we're sort of sleepwalking through all of this and not taking a role of responsibility for what has happened. I mean, we've allowed this to happen, so we are just as responsible in a sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And but no one is coming forward. This conservative Southern congressman, I was telling my wife a couple days ago, I said, you know, when we talk about the mainstream media, or not just the mainstream media, but the establishment in this country. I'm not talking about progressive Democrats. I'm talking about the mainstream Democratic Party, Republican Party. I'm talking about the networks, cable, columnists in newspapers, celebrities. I said, are you aware that only one person among that enormous group, that the mainstream establishment in this country, only one person has come forward and said, Mr. Bugliosi is correct, I'm supporting him? And that's that Southern congressman. And you know, Don, that many, many people agree with what I'm saying, that Bush is a criminal, should be prosecuted, but they're afraid. No one is stepping forward. And this one guy is going to step forward in November. But what does it say about this country, Don, that with all those millions of people out there, and I put out this book, and it's a hell of a book, it's a New York Times bestseller, everyone is terrified, frightened stiff of saying Bugliosi's right. Don, I may have to run. Listen, I want to tell you something. I enjoyed this conversation with you very, very much, and I learned a lot from you. I hope you learned a little bit about how Bush lied to the country here. I think you probably knew much of this stuff, but I enjoyed the conversation very much. I think I'm going to have to run. It's 11:30, and I'm not going to bed right now. I'm up to 2 every night, but I got a lot of things to do. Hopefully, we'll be able to talk again, Don.
Well, before you run, I do want to invite you back. That's one thing. Definitely, we have to continue this discussion. With your permission, I will post your book on my website, directlakeproductions.com.
Anything you do to help, it's out there. You know, people get it on Amazon.com, and it's in all the stores, and it's selling very well. No thanks to the mainstream, though. The mainstream are just blacking the book out.
Well, I will offer to write a book review, and I'll get it published in the Idaho Observer for you.
I appreciate that so much.
You would allow me to do that?
Why would I not? I'd be honored.
Okay. You got it coming then. But I'm going to read it first.
Of course. There may be things that you don't agree with. You know, you're an objective guy, and you're not someone that anyone can buy, and I respect you. So read the book.
Unlike Congress, they didn't read the Patriot Act. They just signed it.
That's right. Oh, okay, Don, great talking to you. Thanks so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
It's been an absolute pleasure, and my thanks to the crew there in New York, especially David. David was very accommodating, very professional, and you have been blessed with a fantastic publisher. I'm definitely going to look them up when I get around to writing a book myself. So,
well, great.
Maybe you can help me open that door, in fact, with an introduction or something.
Absolutely. But in the meantime, Don, take care of yourself, and I wish you the very best.
Okay, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Happy to be on, Don.
All right.
My pleasure.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much, Don.
Okay.
Take care. Good night.
All right. Good night.
Bye.
Folks, you have been listening to Mr. Vincent Bugliosi, renowned Los Angeles prosecutor, and he is the author of The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. I recommend you check this book out. I know it's in every bookstore around the country. I'm going to make sure that I get it put up on my website, directlakeproductions.com. It will be up on the books page, a synopsis and price and all of that. And I'm going to see if I can't get another copy. I've been told I'm going to be sent a promotional copy, so we might have a special call-in show sometime in the near future where we give one of these books away, because I do know I have a second copy coming to me, and that'll be for that lucky listener out there that maybe can answer a question or maybe even just call in. Now, I would have been very happy to accept some calls tonight into the show, even while Mr. Bugliosi was on. I've gotten a report that there were some fires in the neighborhood of our network studios, and many of the phone lines have been totally incapacitated, so we've not been able to take calls from the listening audience. If that is still the case, or if it's not the case, Seth, maybe you could let me know in for these remaining moments that we're on, if anyone's got anything they want to add or comment about this interview, by all means, I would like someone to be able to call in, but I've got to get the word from Seth that the lines are actually working. If not, we'll have to hope that everything's running tomorrow. Tomorrow's show, I have, now I'm getting a message here, so let's see what's going on here. Tomorrow's show, I've got, Tom James. Okay, now I'm told that the numbers on Station 2 are working, so if, anyone would like to call into the show, I'll give you those numbers right now, in case you're not looking at your screen. In the USA and Canada, you can call in at area code 888. 228-4494. In the whole world, area code 877-489-6350. And we have three direct lines you can call from anywhere in the world. Area code 530-776-5154. And I guess what I'm being told now is that we had a fire that took out fiber optic cable that services the city where our network studios are. Another number here, 530-776-5185 or 530-876-9916. I'll stay on for a little bit longer and just give you some thoughts about this interview. It was really interesting. I didn't intend to deliver so much information myself, but I do see, as I'm sure many in the listening audience, a connection between the events on 9/11 and then the so-called reason for going after Osama bin Laden and tying in Saddam Hussein in terms of the lies that we've been told. The fact that we went into a country that wasn't at war, okay, they had a dictator. There are many other countries around the world that currently have dictators, and we didn't go invade those countries. Why not? They know more played a role in 9/11 than Iraq did, and Afghanistan. And this whole thing about Osama bin Laden and all the evidence that's come out from a multiplicity of researchers shows that our government was involved and that there were a few other foreign governments possibly involved. Israel would come to mind, as I mentioned when Mr. Bugliosi was on the show. And that is important. He approached this whole thing just on the basis of what's going on in Iraq, and he's very right in doing so, and I can't blame him whatsoever. I have had the opportunity to look at a large portion of his book and to skim through. It is a wonderfully written book. It's a very easy read. It's very logical. If you're going to present a case to a jury, they have to be able to understand what the case is and what the evidence is. And Mr. Bugliosi did a masterful job from what I have read so far. He's got some very interesting photos in the book as well, as he referred to. And I'm fairly certain that anyone that takes a look at these photos and contemplates what is going on in Iraq, what has transpired, and in the context of how our president feels these days, what a wonderful time he's having, and you see stacks of dead bodies, rooms filled with dead bodies, buildings completely obliterated, and you can almost smell the death in these photos, and every picture of our president is him clowning around and laughing and smiling and just having a gay old time. I can see why Mr. Bugliosi has become very embittered by this whole thing. And he's taken a very positive and courageous step in putting his thoughts down and actually forming a case. Now, I've talked to a few other people who have read this book, and I've gotten the opportunity to listen to Vincent Bugliosi on some other shows. And he presents a very, very well prepared case. Obviously, if he presented the whole case on the show, you wouldn't need to read the book, for one thing. But we will have him up here again, and we will be discussing this because, there's a key to us taking back our country in this message, in this book. I urge you, just on the basis of what I've already read, check out The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder by Vincent Bugliosi. And again, it will be on my website very soon. Now, I've had the opportunity to listen to some other shows. I got to listen to Road Warrior Radio on RBN this evening, and my friend Chris Hinckley, who co-hosted the TNT hour with me, Wednesday afternoon. We got into some serious discussions about, what is going on around the world. There's an armada of ships around Iran right now. And basically, you're not hearing anything about this on the mainstream media. We are virtually on the brink of war with Russia over our government's complicity in the affairs that are going on in Georgia and the attacks on South Ossetia. And Russia has gone in there basically to quell the disturbance. And in the process, there have been some people who have come to Fox News. This was pointed out to me by a few talk show hosts. Chris Hinckley actually played some audio of an interview that was being conducted on the Fox News channel. And they didn't expect this young lady to actually praise the Russian soldiers for saving her, for coming to the aid of these people. Yet we're told that Russia is behind this, and really we're, again, dealing with a criminal element in our government that is bound and determined to just wreak havoc all over the globe. The Olympics are going on. It's a diversion. You really can't look at the Olympics anymore as something that's to be celebrated. And it's a shame because many of the athletes devote their lives to competing at such a high level in whatever events and skills that they acquire through rigorous training, years and years of sacrifice, and years of discipline and dieting and achievement. And it really is something to honor to see people stretch the limits of human capacity. And we can't really even enjoy that because it's no longer intended to be the celebration it once was. And it's being used now as a diversion. It might as well be American Idol or some show on MTV or something on the Sci-Fi Channel, because it's intended to take your attention off of what's happening. I had a discussion today with a past guest on my show. In fact, he's going to be coming back to Evident Footprints, Carl Pearson. And he's doing some remarkable things, and we have some solutions to all of this madness that's going on, and we can start doing things on a local level. We haven't lost our local governments, although many of them have been corrupted from the top down. There is still the possibility that we can enact legislation on a local level that permits us to take back our country. And it may be a piece at a time, but I'm sure if you could do that near where you live, you would feel less stressed out about what's happening in other parts of the country. And I'm not saying that any of us should be ignorant and not pay attention to what is going on in other parts of the country. If you take into context the topic of tonight's show, we're talking about the murder of over a million people in Iraq and the wanton killing of people on 9/11 in our country, and this is going on in other countries, and our intelligence agencies are behind this. These are nothing but diversions and power plays because people are not living up to their commitments. There is no honor among thieves, and there's multinational theft going on through the banking systems, and they like to blame it on people who own houses or people who drive cars. And in reality, they're behind all of this. We're being robbed by the petroleum companies. We're being robbed by the pharmaceutical companies. Mr. Bugliosi himself has mentioned some things that I was unaware of. The taking of pay from these soldiers, where is that money going? When they remove when they take the money out of the soldiers' hands, where does that money go? And I would suggest that it goes into their own pockets. I reported some of these things on news shows as well as on Evident Footprints, and I'll continue to do so. And I know that many of the guests that we bring forward are going to be talking about these things too. Got great guests coming up the rest of the week. As I mentioned earlier, tomorrow night's guest will be Tom James, founder of hempusa.org. He's got some new products besides the hemp products, which are fantastic food sources. It's a a complete food and something that'll get you by through hard times, depending on what comes up in the near future. And also, he's got some new products that are devoted towards cleansing the body and detoxifying the body. And that's important. Now, I just had Dr. B on the show, and we were talking about parasites. We were talking about all kinds of parasites, in fact. They're even in politics. And he bluntly says a parasite is a parasite. But looking at our health is really important, and we're going to be talking about that tomorrow. And that reminds me that I saw chemtrails above my house and above my neighborhood, and I got some really interesting chemtrail shots tonight. They can't deny the X's in the sky. I mean, what is it about these people that they have to create designs up there? It's maddening. But we also called in the sylphs and had the sylphs eat up the chemtrails. So the assault on humanity has not stopped, and it's time that we put our feet down and get some courage. Vincent Bugliosi talked about the spineless nature of the people in our country these days. It's, if you've got a spine, you've got to have some courage, and you've got to have some desire to change things, and we can find solutions to these problems. Now, I was mentioning Carl Pearson, and Carl will be coming on the show soon, and he's got some really exciting ways of bringing jobs into areas for people out there who are looking for work, who are trying to promote a business or promote a service or promote themselves, promote what they do. You know, we are all marketable to some extent. We can earn a living with our skills. And if you've been forced out of a job because a corporation you've worked for a major part of your life has left this country and betrayed us, betrayed the trust, and basically just fattened themselves off of our tax dollars because they weren't paying the taxes and left, the writing's on the wall. They know sooner or later that we can't pay taxes and this economy has to fall. If you don't have a job, you can't pay taxes. And they will try to take everything they have or that you have for themselves before they do that. So it's about time that we start singing a different song and creating some things for ourselves. And we can do that together, but we've got to set our intention in that direction. Well, I guess we're going to call it a night. I'm grateful that Mr. Bugliosi was able to stay as long as he did. I sort of got a last-minute notice that he was going to have to cut the show a little bit short on his portion of the interview. We did get 90 minutes, and that's pretty good. And I know he'll come back, and so we can all look forward to that. I'd like to thank all the listening audience and all those folks out there that sent out emails to their friends and relatives to get listeners to come to the show tonight. Special thanks go out to Don Newsom. I know he worked overtime to get the message out to a lot of people, and I sincerely hope that that was successful. This is an important message that is in the book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. It's already a New York Times bestseller. And if you're unfamiliar with Mr. Bugliosi's work, as he mentioned, he's responsible for putting Charles Manson behind bars and the Manson gang for the Sharon Tate murders. And he's written a number of other books that are all worth reading. I've read several of his books, and they are quite good. Well written, easy to read, easy to understand, and they make all the sense in the world. If you're looking for a way to get a handle on what our problems are, I recommend reading this book. And I will be putting out a review, as I promised Mr. Bugliosi, as soon as I'm finished reading it. In the meantime, also I would like to thank Seth Hendrick for the sound, and again, Don Newsom for making the show possible. I hope you enjoyed the show tonight. It was a momentous event for me and hopefully for you too. In the meantime, I'll see you all tomorrow night on Evident Footprints. Have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.